Good morning, everyone. I'll be talking about censorship in Pakistan. So a brief overview of what is coming up in the next 20 minutes. This is actually the first effort to study censorship in Pakistan. We tried to study what is the cause, effect, and mechanism of censorship in Pakistan. Some of the major findings of this work were we were able to determine that during the period of the study, the Pakistani government shifted from a decentralized censorship system to a centralized system. We were able to figure out what are the mechanisms used. So we found out that majorly the websites are blocked at DNS level. Some of them are also blocked at HTTP level, and I'll talk about why that is happening. We did a brief survey to find out what are the people in Pakistan doing about this. Are they interested in accessing the restricted content and how they're achieving that? So I'll start with a brief introduction of how internet looks in Pakistan. There are about 16 million users, which is about 9% of the total population, which has access to internet. 64% of the internet users actually use the internet to access news websites, which means that the government has a great incentive in blocking certain websites. The largest internet exchange point in Pakistan is controlled by the state, which means it's very easy to implement a centralized censorship system in Pakistan. Being an Islamic state, actually, this is interesting, most of the major services such as telephony, TV, and cellular services, those are regulated by a centralized government body known as the Pakistan Telecommunication Authority, and this is also in charge of the censorship in Pakistan.
Question. Is there any sense of that IXP, is it like 10% of all traffic goes through it or 50?
I think it's about 75%.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are two major internet exchange points, 75% and 25%. Okay, so a brief history of censorship. You'll see a major theme here that most of the websites, they were blocked due to religious reasons. 2006 was the first time 12 websites were found to be offending, and there was just blocked at the complete, the complete websites were blocked. Majorly, I think these were some blogs related to Blogspot. In 2008, a number of YouTube videos were blocked, and this is a great example of censorship done wrong, because what Pakistan managed to do as an attempt to like censor, they were able to hijack YouTube for the rest of the world for about 2 hours due to a BGP misconfiguration. 2010, a number of websites again blocked in retaliation to some something known as the Everybody Draw Muhammad Day. PTA was sanctioned to terminate any telecom service that didn't abide by that rule. So that is, you know, to give you a sense of like the authority PTA has. 2012, the government, this is for the first time, government requests proposals for a robust censorship system. So they're interested in, they put forth a detailed proposal for the requirements that this system should have. They were interested in blocking from domain level to subdomain level, single IPs as well as blocks of IPs. And most importantly, what they were looking for is some censorship system that is able to block a large amount of traffic, deal with large amount of traffic with very low latency. 2012, this is the most recent example of censorship in Pakistan, an infinite ban on YouTube in retaliation to a movie known as Innocence of Muslims. Here again, they tried to censor, but this is not without collateral damage. So a number of Google services are occasionally inaccessible in Pakistan, such as Gmail, Google Drive. I wanted to give a little overview of what related work exists in this field. There are a number of studies that try to understand how censorship is going around in the world. The three major studies, they try to study in different countries, and the two key insights that I want to discuss here are that censorship mechanisms vary from country to country, and the second insight is that mostly these governments, they would publish something that they're blocking certain things, but when you actually try to study that, there is much more censorship going on. Okay, so now I want to move on to methodology. So we used a publicly available list of about 597 websites, which was compiled in 2010. This is a little bit outdated. So in order to ensure that at the time of the study, these websites were blocked, we tried to access them both from within Pakistan and outside of Pakistan to make sure that they're accessible at least from outside the world. Yes.
Are the websites themselves outside Pakistan or some inside?
Mostly they're outside. I don't know of any website that was inside Pakistan. So finally, we had a data set of about 307 websites which we were interested in studying how they are being blocked within Pakistan. Okay, so in order to understand the censorship, we used the system CensMon, which was presented in FOCAI 2011. And it has four major components. So first, it tries to do a DNS lookup. We modified this a little bit because we were interested in studying not only how the local DNS resolvers behave, but also we were interested in looking at what is the response of the public DNS resolvers when queried from within Pakistan. The second component, IP blacklisting, tries to establish a TCP connection using the IP address and sees whether it's able to establish. The third component, HTTP filtering, tries to see if the website is blocked at an HTTP level, which means you're trying to see what response packet is returned, whether you get redirected to a censored page or whether you're able to retrieve the web page. The fourth component looks for URL keyword filtering, which is, so in order to do that, we appended the actual URL of interest to Google and tried to query for that. So Google's normal behavior should be to return a 404 not found because this page shouldn't exist under normal circumstances. But if it is being censored, if the censor finds this keyword in the URL, then it's going to return a censored page. So that's how we know whether URL keyword filtering is going on. So we tested this methodology on five different networks. Two of them were university networks, two of them were home networks, and one of them was cellular network. This study is majorly focused on the areas of Northern Pakistan. So I'll talk about in future work, we want to extend this into other parts of Pakistan to see if there are different policies. Okay, so results. You'll see I'll talk about pre-April and post-April results. So the significance of this is that the author when he was testing, he found, so he had completed the tests before April, and during April he found that something had changed. The censored page that he was getting had changed. So he decided to do the tests after April to see, to figure out what had changed. So before April, what happened was that that the blocking was done at ISP level, which meant that depending on which ISP you are connected to, you will get a different page returned. So how this worked was that most websites were blocked at DNS level. So when you queried the IP address at DNS level, you'll get a domain not found record. What is interesting is that the local DNS resolvers would return this record, but also the public DNS resolvers, when queried from within Pakistan, they would return an NX domain record. What is further interesting is that the sensor is able to replicate the behavior of certain public DNS resolvers. So they would, instead of just returning the NX domain record, sometimes they would return the NX domain redirector. So they're able to replicate what general behavior these public DNS resolvers take when they don't find a domain. We didn't find any evidence of IP or URL keyword filtering. Some websites were blocked through HTTP 302 redirection. So you'll see here that there are two major ways of blocking, and what they were trying to really achieve was that they wanted to block some websites fully, and for example, they wanted to block YouTube fully, but there were some websites that they were quite interested in blocking at a finer granularity, so they were interested in blocking some Wikipedia pages, that they achieved through HTTP 302 redirection. So here are some examples of ISP level warning screens that you will see when you queried from within Pakistan, and depending on the ISP, you'll see these different pages. Now, post-April, Pakistan moved to an internet exchange point level filtering, which we were able to determine based on, you know, the no matter which ISP you were connected to, you'll get the same censored page in response. And another shift that they made was, instead of HTTP 302 redirection, they switched to HTTP 200 packet injection. Now, thinking about it, it doesn't really buy you anything moving from HTTP 302 to 200 packet injection. When we dug into this further, what was happening is that Pakistan had bought these censorship devices. This was actually, same results were reported by the Citizen Lab, another group that studies censorship. And they attributed this to the censorship devices built by NetSweeper, that is a Canadian firm, and that they also found that the same kind of page is returned in different other countries, for example, Qatar, UAE, Kuwait, and Yemen. So we did a brief survey. This is majorly focused on personal contexts. We wanted to understand, are people interested in accessing the web pages that are being blocked? What we found was that majorly people are accessing the blocked content via public VPNs and web proxies. So some further exploration that this work did was we were interested in seeing what alternative circumvention mechanisms can be used. So one thing that they tried was look at whether web-based DNS lookups would work. So the idea is you just use a website to resolve your DNS query and then use that IP address to connect to the particular IP address. At this point, what we found was that all the websites that were blocked at DNS level were also blocked at the HTTP level. So exploring further within that particular website was not possible. Some mechanisms that actually work are CDNs and are search engine caches. And this is because URL keyword filtering is not being done within Pakistan. So these are some of the alternative circumvention mechanisms that work. So to summarize, some of the major findings of this work were Pakistan has undergone a major shift from ISP-level censorship to an internet exchange point-level censorship. Most websites are blocked at DNS level, and some are also blocked at HTTP level. The websites which are blocked at DNS level are also blocked at HTTP level, so there is kind of like a two-layered approach. And people are using VPNs and web proxies to circumvent the restrictions. So this was just a first step in exploring censorship in Pakistan, and we're interested in taking this work further and seeing are there any policy differences between different parts of the country. So we want to extend this to different networks and also see whether there are different policies for other websites, whether there are other websites that we don't know of that are blocked. So in order to explore that. We want to do a deeper analysis of how DNS is being blocked. The thing where I talked about an NX domain redirection, that is not clear how the sensors are currently doing that. So we want to be able to explore that further. We want to examine the side effects of DNS injection, which means that queries that do not originate from within Pakistan but traverse Pakistan, what is the effect of the censorship on them? And finally, we want to study do an analysis of Streisand effect in Pakistan, which means that websites which are not popular after they get blocked or after they get censored, they gain more popularity. And Zubair found that there are some like interesting, promising results in that direction. Questions. So I think I can probably get Zubair online for the question answer session. So let's try that. meanwhile, I can take any questions. While he's on. Yeah.
Given the DNS and HTTP blocks, have you seen any evidence of certificate tampering as well?
Sorry?
Of certificate tampering, for example, for SSL size or DNS sync deployments?
So this didn't really deal with, we didn't explore it in that direction, what is happening with encrypted traffic. But yeah, this is a good direction to explore. Yeah.
Do you have any evidence of if the DNS level censorship is being done at the resolvers, like they're actually changing what the resolvers know, or if they're just doing it in flight, so blocking and replacing the packets, or possibly just injecting new ones that will return first?
I think so that, I'm not really sure about this, but I think what is happening is that they're doing it on the fly, because there are some new websites that get blocked based on just the content. So I'm not sure, but I if I were to guess, I think that's okay. So I think Zubair is here, so he might be able to answer this better. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, so we got Zubair online. Do you want to ask your question again? Repeat your question.
Try. If you can hear me.
Zubair, can you hear?
Yes, I.
Okay.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Do you have any on if the DNS-based censorship is being done at the resolvers, so they're actually modifying what they know, or if it's being done in flight, so they're changing or injecting new packets?
So this is something that we haven't. Hello?
Yeah, Zubair, we can hear you well.
Unfortunately, I locked you in the middle, so could you please repeat the question?
Okay, so the question is that he's asking about the DNS censorship that is taking place. So whether the resolvers do it in flight or do they have prior mechanism for storing the records? Is that
All right. That's a relevant question. In fact, that's actually a part of our future work. So we're not entirely sure how this is done. Like you clearly mentioned, there are two ways of doing it. You could either do it on the fly, or you maintain a blacklist of doing it. But so technically, we haven't really measured this, but from anecdotal evidence with respect to NetSweeper, they actually maintain a blacklist of existing resolvers. It's not done on the fly. But this is anecdotal, so it might not be precise in this case.
Other questions?
So I'm curious, on your background slide, you were talking in 2012 about how Pakistan did a call for sensor tools. And I remember there was a big pushback saying from everybody in Pakistan and around the world saying, hey, you shouldn't be censoring, you shouldn't do that. And I think that they backed off and they said, okay, I changed my mind, I don't want censorship tools. And then they get NetSweeper. What was the process for that? Did they get a bunch of bids anyway? Did they get even more advertisement because everybody was yelling about it? Did they benefit from the publicity, or was it bad?
I don't think the two events are actually related. I think at some level, the government wanted to move on to centralized censorship. They've actually been wanting to do this since 2010. I guess 2012 just gave them another incentive to push this or to push the envelope. They actually had an open call for the censorship system, and apparently it was a transparent process, if you will, to select one of the many people who had applied, and eventually they decided on NetSweeper. The interesting fact is that recently there's actually a case in the Lahore High Court by a bunch of people from the civil society who want YouTube to be uncensored. So during the proceedings of the court, one of the high-level officials of the Pakistan Telecom Authority actually on the record admitted that they were using NetSweeper because apparently they had the best technology in the market, and B, then Sweeper was actually willing to sort of customize the system for Pakistan. So I guess it was based on some of the intended requirements of the system as well.
You mentioned the VPN solutions. Are they mainly using Pakistani VPN providers, or are they all going international and taking the latency hit to send all of their traffic abroad? Do you have any feeling for, is that a satisfactory solution right now? Is there danger of compromise with those VPNs? That seems to be the solution that Pakistanis are adopting, right?
Right. Zubair, do you want to take that question?
Could you please repeat the question?
Yeah, so do you know if people in Pakistan who are using the VPN services are those majorly Pakistani VPNs that they are using, or are they using more internationally? So are they doing anything about the latency?
Oh, no. So all of these are actually international ones. The ones in the private domain, which are not charged, so the likes of hotspot streams, spot plugs, etc., are actually public VPNs, and most of them are actually based out of the U.S. So it'd be an interesting thing to study. In fact, I don't think that's just confined to Pakistan. In most of these countries, a lot of people have moved towards using public VPNs. So it'd be interesting to analyze the traffic in, say, places like California, where whether there has been an increment in traffic because people in other parts of the world are now trying to use these VPNs to circumvent censorship in their own country. A small number of people in Pakistan do have access to corporate VPNs, and they're clearly using them, but the majority of the people are still lopsided towards public VPNs. I guess that's for two reasons. One is the technical reason, because it's very easy to set up. Most of these public VPNs come up with their own applications that work out of the box. You just need to install them, and then you'll be up and running. And secondly, the monetary aspect is very important as well, that they don't have to pay anything for any of these VPN services, because corporate VPNs are actually pretty expensive. So that'll generally be out of the reach of the ordinary internet user in Pakistan. Does that answer your question?
It does, thank you.
Yeah.
So is Information Technology University a state-sponsored university in Pakistan?
That's a good question. So where is Information Technology University a state-sponsored university in Pakistan?
Yes, it is. That's the ironic bit about it. So the Information Technology University is actually a public sector university. So while I was conducting this study, I was actually told that it probably wasn't such a good idea to pursue this, but then I sort of got in touch directly with the vice chancellor, and he was very amenable to this idea. From the perspective of, say, finding new ways to actually implement censorship. So if you go through the paper, one thing that you realize is that you can actually do selective censorship. And that's something that the government is interested in. In fact, the earlier case that I mentioned in the Lahore High Court, one of the arguments being used by the Pakistan Telecom Authority in general to have a blanket blockage of YouTube is that they lack the technical mechanisms to block individual videos on YouTube. But the study that we conducted in our paper actually proves contrary, that for certain videos they've been able to do selective censorship based on HTTP. So yes, the university in general was very interested in the results of the study and how they could use them to sort of implement a state-level censorship policy where they could actually include people from the civil society and come up with a policy paper. And this is a disclaimer, you know, me leaving Information Technology University and moving to IBM Research and conducting this study, these three events are not related.
So he's saying that the government of Pakistan is aware of this research and approves of it because it can assist them in doing better censorship?
Right.
Could you repeat that?
She's saying that the government of Pakistan is aware of this study and they are like, they are amenable to this because they find that it is actually going to help them in building better censorship systems?
Yes and no. I mean, they're clearly aware of it because a copy of this paper is actually a part of the official proceedings of the same case that I mentioned. So they are sort of aware of it, but I'm not entirely sure whether they're clearly amenable. My perspective is just based on the discussion that I had with the vice chancellor of the university.
So it's like very, very focused. I mean, he's only has like one point in the little sample space. It's not really clear like what the government of Pakistan would think about this.
I see. Thank you.
Sure.
So could you say a little bit something about, you know, the motivations for the censorship? Because sometimes it seems like they're just doing what people want, like blog videos and things like that, and usually it happens right after something happens in the external world. So is it just like a reaction to what people want to kind of censor those things, or is it just, or is it really made more of a government wanting more control of things?
So the question is, is the censor kind of like trying to achieve what the people want, as I mean, probably like, you know, based on religious reasons, or is it the government trying to control more?
It's actually a bit of both. But I would say that the silent majority actually does not want censorship. I mean, the ones that you get to see on TV are probably the ones who want the censorship in the first place, but a majority of the citizens actually don't really want that. One of the interesting things about the case in front of the Lahore High Court is that they actually have testimonials from a number of people, which include people from the civil society, doctors, engineers, as well as students, who say that ban on YouTube is has sort of made it hard for them to access good information on the internet. But yes, the government does have an ulterior motive for doing this as well. One incident that comes to memory is that in 2010, a number of websites were blocked, and the reasoning which was given was that it hosted blasphemous content. But within the lines, a website belonging to a certain workers' union was banned as well, and nobody actually noticed that. So yes, I think, you know, the religious reasons sort of sugarcoat the real reasons why they want to stifle the flow of information.
Yes.
How do the out of the box gen solutions establish
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
How do the out-of-the-box VPN solutions establish and maintain trust? So how do you know that no one's tampered with the configurations?
So are you wondering more about, like, from the perspectives of citizens of Pakistan, like whether they're
using VPNs to circumvent the...
Right. So Zubair, the question is, like, how do people establish and maintain trust with the VPN services that they're using?
I guess there is no technical mechanism for them to do so. I mean, these are mechanisms which are just spread by the word of mouth. So even right now, if you Google how to circumvent internet censorship in Pakistan, you come across probably hundreds of blog entries that describe different mechanisms through which you can access this blog content. So primarily, it just spreads through the word of mouth, and because people are not really aware of the technical mechanisms which are involved in which are involved in bypassing these restrictions, they don't really care about the security implications. So it'd be very easy for the government to make a fake VPN and sort of like the honeypot and trace all the people who use VPN. So there are major security implications there.
We have time for one more question. Comment. All right, let's thank you.
Thank you.